the pale ones, ignored the names I was given by the first peoples of this land and called me Mountain Ash because I reminded them of a timber back home. Bah! Do they know any tree that rises 40 times the height of one pale human in less than 100 summers? They point at me as they pass by and state my name with authority. "Eucalyptus regnans," says one. "Giant gum," says another. "Swamp gum," says a third. "Stringy gum," says a fourth. But the joke is on them. My real name is only known to other trees. I've been here 90 years or so, and though I've yet to reach my full height, it's fair to say I have a broad perspective, a bird's eye view, if you will. The hollows in my handsome trunk provide nests for parrots and possums. My delicate white blossoms feed honeyeaters and rosellas. Fantails and flycatchers probe my bark for grubs. Humans have been known to press their hands reverentially to my trunk and gaze up at the sky through my canopy. But the story I want to tell you today takes place at ground level. Down in the muck of discarded bark and leaf litter, grubs, ground beetles, and insects so rarely seen, they've yet to be named by anyone except each other. On the day the story begins, a sulphur-crested cockatoo died at the foot of my trunk. There was nothing sinister in it. She'd lived a good life for nearly 5 decades. I assumed her flesh would be taken by the usual scavengers, her feathers and bones left to the earth to which we all return. But then the boy turned up. I recognised him. Scrawny, with a spray of dark freckles across the spike of a nose, he smelled of cooking grease and sweat. He usually whacked at trees as he stomped through the bush. I assumed for a moment he'd shouldered his stick, until he drew close enough for me to see that on this occasion he was carrying a rifle. The cockatoo stopped the scrawny boy in his tracks. I watched him nudge the bird with a sneakered foot as if to make sure it was dead. This made his next move all the more bewildering, for he raised the rifle and, taking aim from less than a metre, shot the dead body of the cockatoo. Shock ricocheted through the bush, bugs scuttling beneath bark, snakes sliding into holes, birds shrinking into nests. Scrawny boy lowered the rifle and watched as a whirl of red stained the white chest feathers. With a shrill whoop, he lifted the gun above his head with both hands and ran off. My magnificent shadow was starting to lengthen when Scrawny boy returned, still carrying the gun. Trailing behind, another boy, swinging a large stick, chopping at trees, shrubs, grasses, any living thing before him. Scrawny boy stopped within metres of the dead cockatoo and pointed. Stick boy leaned forward and poked the bird with his stick. "You killed it." "Told ya," Scrawny boy said. "Now it's your turn." Stick boy blanched as Scrawny boy handed him the rifle. "What do I shoot?" Scrawny boy looked up, eyes narrowing as he surveyed my towering trunk. "There," he pointed. And I felt his target, the black cockatoo nest in one of my hollows. A parent bird must have been visible at the entrance, or feeding on a branch nearby. Perhaps Stick Boy sensed my outrage, because he kicked a clump of leaf litter in the direction of an Indian miner. who lifted one yellow leg as if to avoid being sullied, but was otherwise undisturbed.
"What about that one?"
"Yes," I urged silently, "kill the invasive species, not our beautiful yellow-tailed black cockatoo." But Scrawny Boy shook his head.
"Gotta be a big bird," he said, "otherwise it don't count."
Count for what? I wondered. But before I could think further, another shot rang out, followed by a screech and a sickening thud as the black cockatoo's body hit the ground at the foot of my trunk. High up in the canopy, my blossoms shed pollen like tiny white tears. Scrawny Boy slapped Stick Boy on the shoulder.
"Shit, you did it!"
The younger boy handed back the rifle and punched Scrawny Boy on the arm.
"Race you back!"
His voice was light, but as he turned to run, I saw his cheeks burned red. Night descended slowly on the bush. The chant of the frogs and cicadas gradually drowning out the wailing cries of the black cockatoos. Stick Boy reappeared at first light, without his stick, treading gently, kicking up no dirt. When he reached the base of my trunk, he fell to his knees and began digging in the space between the bodies of the two cockatoos. He kept on digging, his hands growing black and red with dirt and blood, until he'd carved a deep hole in the earth. Squatting back on his haunches, he brushed his hands on his faded jeans, lifted the body of the white cockatoo, and laid it in the ground with a gentleness that took me by surprise. He picked up the black cockatoo and cradled the bird to his chest. His body was shaking, and as he raised his face to the canopy, I saw that he was crying. When he wiped his tears, he left muddy streaks on his cheeks. Stick Boy bowed his head and laid the body of the black cockatoo beside the white one. Covering them with a layer of my cast-off bark, he paused to free a skink caught up in one of my curls. He piled dirt on the bark and filled the grave, scattering a layer of leaf litter on top, before rising slowly to his feet. A gust of wind made my leaves whish like breaking waves. Stick Boy cocked his head, as though hearing the swishes, chirps, thrums, shrieks, and whistles of this place for the first time. He gazed slowly at the bush around him and inhaled deeply, committing its scent to memory. Then, to my astonishment, he threw his arms around me and pressed his cheek to my rough trunk. I tasted salt on my skin and felt the feathers around his heart.